This question states that the Massachusetts governor has actively expressed interest in purchasing hydropower from Canada. New Hampshire has not. Has a publicly regulated utility, would Eversource work with the citizens of New Hampshire on an option to bring hydropower from Canada into the New England grid south from the Connecticut River, along I-93 and along I-91, or an alternate underground route from the Canadian border to that point?
Okay, so the project that we've proposed obviously terminates in Deerfield, New Hampshire, which essentially is the interconnection point between this line with the New England grid. We've selected that endpoint because it's a very robust portion of the regional electric grid. There's very few system upgrades required in and around that Deerfield substation to allow this amount of power to flow onto the grid and then across New Hampshire. So we've consciously picked that delivery point because of its design characteristics. We think it's kind of the optimal location for the termination of this project.
Okay. Also,
were there anything either of the two of you would add?
This next question deals with the co-ops loop as well. Volume 1 in your Forward New Hampshire Plan, public interest, bullet number 2 states no cost to New Hampshire customers. All costs of siting and constructing Northern Pass will be paid by the project at no cost to New Hampshire customers. At bullet number 6, COAS loop transmission upgrade, it states as a project benefit, quote, a transmission upgrade of the COAS loop, which will relieve existing constraints and unlock up to 100 megawatts of renewable generation, close quote. Is it correct that Eversource guarantees here, based on this plan that's been filed with the SEC, that Eversource or its affiliates will not in the future come before the PUC or go to New Hampshire ratepayers for any of these proposed upgrade costs to the COAS loop transmission upgrade as listed in bullet 6 if the Northern Pass project is permitted?
Based upon the current scope of work that we're anticipating to the COAS loop, it's our intention not to go to the Public Utilities Commission for cost recovery. They will be funded through the project and the agreements that we alluded to earlier.
And I assume you're talking about bullet number 6 that the
yes,
question
the currently planned upgrades will not be passed on to New Hampshire customers.
Next question. Next question is, what arrangements, if any, does Northern Pass or its affiliates have with Beirut Wagner on using their lands for the Northern Pass right-of-way in the North Country in return for upgrading the COAS loop or other?
So, Sam, do you want to handle that question?
Yeah, the two are not linked at all. We have an agreement with Beirut to establish a new right-of-way of approximately 24 miles through their property, and lease arrangement is part of our property rights. The upgrade of the COAS loop is independent of the Beirut property.
Okay. Next question involves the Forward New Hampshire Plan as well. Volume 1, Forward New Hampshire Plan, public interest. Bullet number 3, power purchase agreement. As described above, the PPA will permit delivery, and this is a quote from your bullet number 3. As described above, the PPA will permit the delivery to New Hampshire of approximately 100 megawatts of firm, on-peak, renewable hydroelectric power together with the potential environmental attributes and will provide greater price stability at estimated customer cost savings totaling $100 million over 20 years, close quote. Since the application uses the term, quote, firm, which is Northern Pass's word choice, to describe this arrangement, can you provide documentation to justify that such an agreement exists, or is this another attempt to mislead the public as to how certain the deal and terms actually are?
So the agreement that exists and has been executed as between us and the supplier of the power, Hydro-Québec, is in the form of a memorandum of understanding. The term that's referred to has to do with the firmness of the power, meaning you know, what exactly is Hydro-Québec's commitment? And it is a firm commitment, meaning it is financially available to Public Service New Hampshire, now Eversource New Hampshire, during the hours required. Okay, so it's a, in you know, wholesale marketing parlance, it's financially firm.
In hearings last week, you stated that full burial using the I-93 corridor was impossible in part because no party to Franconia Notch interstate settlement would permit such use. Have you had a conversation with all of the principals to that settlement? Have you made a similar official request with New Hampshire Department of Transportation to use the I-93 corridor for a burial option? If so, with whom and what were the responses?
Would you like to introduce yourself, Mark?
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. Why don't you introduce yourself first?
My name is Mark Hodgson. I'm a private attorney in Concord, consulting with Northern Pass on highway permitting issues for their underground sections primarily. For 24 years, I was in the Attorney General's office, and I represented DOT prior to going out on my own. Can you repeat the question, please?
Yes, I can. Last week, you stated that full burial using the I-93 corridor was impossible in part because no party to the Franconia Notch interstate settlement would permit such a use. Have you ever requested a conversation with all of the principals to that settlement? Have you made a similar official request with New Hampshire Department of Transportation to use I-93 corridor for a burial option? If so, when, with whom, and what were the responses?
Well, at the outset, I disagree with the premise of the question. I think it actually mischaracterizes what I said. But regardless of that, the Franconia Notch Parkway was built under a federal court consent decree back in the 1980s. And there are numerous signatories to it, including the Appalachian Mountain Club and the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, among others. And that agreement specifically prohibits any further construction or any additional lanes within the Franconia Notch area. Now, that is one barrier to going through the Franconia Notch Parkway. The other aspect of it is Franconia Notch is incredibly environmentally sensitive, which is what led to that agreement. And Franconia Notch is also very culturally sensitive in New Hampshire. It is, after all, the place where we get our identity. And that's why the Franconia Notch Parkway is unique, or at least at the time, and I believe it still is, was very unique in the nation. That's why it's not a full interstate design. When you go through it, you'll notice that it goes down to one lane in each direction, barely divided by a few feet.
Okay, Mr. Hodgson, the question though is, have you ever requested a conversation with all of the principals, please be courteous, with all of the principals to that settlement agreement?
The answer to that is no, we have not requested a conversation. One of the signatories has already filed suit against us for other underground sections. We do know DOT's position on that, and we have had discussions with DOT regarding both 93 and Franconia Notch.
Okay.
Just by way of background, DOT put in a guardrail in between those two lanes that I mentioned back in the early 1990s. I was in part involved in that process. And that took an incredible amount of effort and years of effort by many people in the North Country to get it done. And that wasn't easy. DOT has no desire to open up that project for a non-safety agreement.
Okay, and the second question is about the rest of the I-93 corridor. Have you made a similar request to the Department of Transportation regarding the I-93 corridor? I assume that means beyond Franconia Notch.
Right, I assume.
And if so, with whom and what was the response?
We have had conversations with NHDOT for going 3 years at least. I couldn't tell you exactly, over what they would look for in an application and what they would require and what they prefer. And they made it clear they preferred us using other or applying for other roads rather than I-93 at the beginning. And so that's what we started looking at is alternatives to I-93, which is how we came up with the present proposal. And just keep in mind, the DOT's policy on using I-93 or any freeway or any interstate for new underground facilities is summed up in one sentence. And that is in their utility accommodation manual, which says longitudinal, meaning along the highway, installations are not permitted within the limited access right-of-way lines parallel to either the through road or its ramps. That's their policy. It's one sentence. The commissioner can grant exceptions to that if there is an extreme hardship. And part of the extreme hardship criteria is you have to show that you have no other viable alternatives. And our application shows we do have viable alternatives. From our perspective, we can't meet the criteria. And from DOT's perspective, we can't meet their criteria. And also keep in mind that even if the commissioner granted an exception, that exception can't be granted for the median or the roadway itself. It would be granted outside the roadway in the disturbed areas. And that means we'd be building, and we can't access it from the road, so we'd be building an access road parallel to I-93 along the fence line. And I think the environmental impacts there would be extreme.
Next question is regarding the same thing. Would you use the I-93 corridor for full burial if the appropriate parties did not object?
Yeah, let me answer this. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we have filed recently with Department of Energy.
I don't think so.
A full explanation as to why the I-93 corridor is not feasible. You know, I think all of these questions could be answered by reading that explanation.
Well, maybe this one can too. You tell us, Mr. Quinlan. Last week at public hearings, Northern Pass stated that the cost of burying the project would be an additional $1 billion plus. Will you make public in sufficient detail the documentation that you used to reach that conclusion?
So it's a fairly simple exercise, but we think it's accurate. You know, we look at the incremental cost per mile of underground construction. It's in the $5 to $10 million per mile. That's now based upon cost estimates that we've gotten by the folks who are actually going to build this line, as well as some of the experience that Mr. Bowes referred to. So we've got experience. The folks who are actually building this and are going to commit to building it for a particular price of giving us bids, we know what the cost per mile is for underground construction. It's taking that range and applying it to the current overhead portion. That's how you arrive at the approximately $1 billion number.
Okay. If Northern Pass were able to use the I-93 corridor for a full burial project, would Eversource achieve the same payback from Hydro-Québec compared to if it used the proposed corridor? If so, or if not, what would the payout difference be?
Hypothetically, the project would result in a larger return. Why? Because it's an additional $1 billion worth of investment. It's the investment that triggers the return to Eversource. So a more costly project results in larger returns, all other things being equal.
And since Hydro-Québec is a partner in Northern Pass LLC, a party to this
application.
Since Hydro-Québec is a partner, and if you don't agree with what this says, you just tell them. Since Hydro-Québec is a partner in Northern Pass LLC, a party to this application before the Site Evaluation Committee and this evening's public hearing, this question is to Hydro-Québec. What consideration and conversations has Hydro-Québec had with the TDI New England Clean Power Link, if any, to use their just-approved buried transmission line in Vermont, and can you provide specifics?
So I think the underlying premise of the question is not accurate. Hydro-Québec is not a partner in Northern Pass Transmission LLC. That is a wholly owned subsidiary of Eversource. As to, you know, what conversations Hydro-Québec may have had with other projects, I'm not privy to those.
And last question on this sheet is, can you specifically state why the North Country's scenic value is not of sufficient value to the residents of this region of the state and the tourists that will visit it and make up the mainstay of this region's economy to not propose burying the project in the North Country?
So, you know, as I said at the outset, we are continuing to focus on scenic and view impacts across this entire route. We selected the areas that we did for underground construction based upon feedback we had gotten from many different stakeholders across the state. Universally, they pointed us in that direction. We are also doing things here in Coos County. I mentioned we moved the entire line to the east into that Wagner Forest, which allowed us to put 24 miles of this segment area being routinely timbered. That was intended to mitigate view impacts. I mentioned some of the other things we're doing around design, structure, location. We do have 8 miles of underground construction here in the North Country. So we are focused on mitigating view impacts, not only in Coos County, but across the entirety of the route. Again, ultimately we have to strike a balance that results in a project that can move forward.
I think we've hit most of the burial questions. The next set of questions, and there's a lot of them, deal with the general area of economics, and this includes all various things from taxes biomass power plants are really important to the local economy here. Will this power from Canada hurt our local energy resources and have a negative impact on the logging industry in Coos County?
Short answer is no. You know, if you look at the regional energy supply mix over the next 5 or 10 years, you've got thousands of megawatts of existing generation, whether it's coal-fired, oil-fired, nuclear plants that have either retired already or have announced their intention to retire. All of that needs to be replaced. Northern Pass is it's a large supply, but it's only gonna replace a fraction of what is actually retiring. You know, we are going to need to look to other sources to replace the balance of it if we're going to keep prices low. You know, obviously a portion of that will be natural gas-fired power plants, but there's plenty of opportunity for small-scale renewables, and in particular biomass, to help fill the energy supply needs of the future. I think here in the North Country, we've tried to propose a project that furthers small-scale renewables, including biomass. You know, I mentioned the Coos Loop upgrade. That's specifically designed to unlock that potential. Those plants that currently exist and are constrained, including Burgess Biomass here in Berlin, shouldn't be constrained in the future as a result of transmission limitations. So we think these are complementary. We think there's certainly a role for large-scale hydro, and plenty of opportunity for small-scale renewables going forward.
Next question is, in Coos County, a new right-of-way through the working forest will be created. Will New Hampshire loggers and companies be engaged for this, or will the contracts go to out-of-state workers and companies?
Yeah. So this is a great example of local opportunities that I expect will be fully sourced locally. You know, certainly an expertise here in the North Country around logging. So where we're clearing new rights of way, whether it's for this portion of the route or for a laydown area or a transition station, I fully expect we're going to source those locally. And based upon kind of preliminary feedback we've gotten from our large contractors, they've been very pleased with the level of support they can source locally. In all instances, it's best if we can put local folks to work on this project. That's our intention, particularly in this critical area.
Next question is, please explain the impact, and if you've already done this, you can just say so. Please explain the impact of the multiple power plants that will be closing in New England in the next few years.
Yeah, so I think I did touch upon that, but, you know, just to frame that out. So if you look at all of New England, roughly 32,000 megawatts of generation existing, approximately a quarter of it, 8,000 megawatts, has either retired or announced its intention to retire. Northern Pass is a little over 1,000 megawatts. So if you think about 8,000 megawatts going away, we'll replace around an eighth of that. You know, that's my point. There's plenty of opportunity for other sources of energy to help fill that void, including some of the ones we're referring to here that, you know, there's real opportunity in the North Country, whether it's biomass or otherwise.
Do you consider the COAS loop an asset belonging to Eversource New Hampshire or to the ratepayers? And is the proposed upgrade of the COAS loop an investment in Eversource infrastructure?
So I think, you know, as to the second question, it's clearly an investment in existing Eversource infrastructure. As Mr. Johnson indicated, we're going to take our existing line, we're going to reconductor it, we're going to make it a more robust transmission segment with larger conductors. So it's clearly an investment in our infrastructure. As to, you know, legal ownership of that infrastructure, these are investments that the existing COAS loop, they were made by Public Service New Hampshire on behalf of customers, all in furtherance of our delivery of reliable transmission service to the area. So they are technically and legally assets of Eversource. They certainly deliver benefits to our customers in the region, and they'll certainly be upgraded as part of the project.
It's a two-part question. You've probably already answered the first part, but what does Northern Pass say it? Why does Northern Pass say that it is uneconomic to bury the lines? Number two, will Northern Pass expenses be included in electricity costs?
So when we look at $1 billion of additional costs for no additional capacity, we don't believe it's an economic project. Ultimately, someone has to pay for this infrastructure. It will not be New Hampshire customers, but others will pay for it. And there comes a point where the benefits to those others are exceeded by the cost. We think an additional $1 billion with no additional capacity makes it an uneconomic project. Again, we've already added several hundred million dollars of cost and reduced the original project size by about 20% based upon feedback from New Hampshire. An additional $1 billion pushes us over the tipping point. And what was the second question? I'm sorry.
Will Northern Pass expenses be included in electricity costs?
So Northern Pass's expenses, which are expenses of continued operation once it's in service, will be collected through the agreements I was referring to with Hydro-Quebec. They will not be borne by New Hampshire customers.
Okay, the next three questions at least have to deal with property tax issues. The first one is, you are distributing sheets titled Illustration of Northern Pass Transmission Local Property Tax Payments for Various Towns. Are the figures in the columns that are headed as, quote, illustrative value of Northern Pass Transmission and, quote, illustrative tax payment range, are those quotes in your sheets, that your informational sheets, I guess they're talking about, based on current tax values or on your projected figures resulting from suing towns for lower assessments?
Okay. So I'm going to introduce Lisa Shapiro. Lisa, if you can provide your background and answer the question.
Hi, my name is Lisa Shapiro, and to answer that question specifically, it was based on kind of the midpoint of the estimated cost of the project projected for the community, and then using a 2.5% depreciation rate each year, because that's one of the methods for taxation, and for what is fair market value.
Thank you. Why should towns that have underground get any additional money?
So if what you're referring to is the Ford New Hampshire Fund, I think I said this at the outset, you know, we are putting a particular emphasis on the North Country with respect to the Ford New Hampshire Fund. Again, that's the $200 million fund that we are establishing really to drive community benefit. You know, we are going to focus a substantial percentage of that right here in Coos County and in the other areas along the route where the construction is largely overhead.
Okay. Actually, there's more than three questions about taxes, so I'll keep going on the taxes. For many, many of us whose property abuts the right-of-way and who stand to lose thousands of dollars in equity in our houses, should the towers be constructed in view of our homes, what recourse do we have? I know that I, for one, can't afford to lose upwards of $20,000 in the value of my house, and I'm sure many others are in the same position.
So we've conducted an extensive amount of outreach to abutting landowners up and down the route. I think we've had over 3,000 touch points thus far. So we're continuing to have discussion with adjacent landowners. I would refer that questioner to Sam Johnson. He's probably the right intake point for that question. He's overseeing, among other things, the outreach. So if there are specific questions that need to be answered, I think that's probably the single most efficient way to.
So that questioner.
And that's a general comment.
And where can they reach Mr. Johnson? Is he here? Oh, I'm sorry.
He's right here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So maybe during a break, come up and introduce yourself.
Okay. So that you might be able to discuss a specific property.
Yep. I can do some. Otherwise, the 1-800 number or the email hotline gets funneled directly to me, so I'll get through there as well.